At the third stroke, it will be...
Hello and welcome to EUC Digest, your audio snack on everything EUC related. And in today's show, we'll be talking about alternative communication platform and especially on cool startups. So before we introduce our guest and we dive into those awesome topics of the cool startups and the alternative communication platforms, please allow us to introduce ourselves. My name is Jits Langerijk and I'm your host for this episode. And with me today is Erik van Klaveren. Hey Erik. How are you doing, mate?
Cool. It's great to be back. And I'm especially looking forward to our guest today, who is one of my favorite heroes, especially on starting up stuff, which is really strange, but I love it.
Oh, I'm totally with you on this one. So, but before we head over to the introduction of our special guest for today, let me take the opportunity to say thank you to one of our sponsors. And the sponsor of this episode is iGIL. And iGIL is the provider of next-generation Edge OS for workspaces, which provides a secure and high-performance managed endpoint operating system, which runs on any device, including their own UD Pocket, and provides you access to Microsoft WVD, VMware Amazon, Citrix, and you name it. So now, before we introduce our guest, Erik, I know we've been tapping our resources and did some browsing over the internet, and we came across some interesting facts about our guest, right? So can you name a few and see if our listeners know who our guest is of today?
I sure can, and this is really, really excited. And not only me, but on behalf of the whole team who scoured the internet and all social channels, we came across some interesting facts about a guest. And one of that didn't make it really, but I think really stood out. And this is why I'm really excited about this guest, because he tried to create something from one of my favorite childhood movies. But not going into there, our guest is a really very creative, true startup entrepreneur, who also transforming ideas into reality by developing new solutions based on cutting-edge technologies. And he's even knowing how to build a company from there. So, yeah, that's I think, really cool. That's not the only thing, because I got a couple of more. Rumor has it, that in a Bechtel conferencing room, he once caused a major incident. And I see our guest laughing, flying a drone around the room in the process of nearly hitting the CIO while crashing into window blinds. And probably this chief is better off riding one of his bikes. He owns, restores, and drives a huge collection of vintage Harley... This chief is collecting and riding legendary Indian motorcycles. And although he lives in Phoenix, Arizona, his family is originally from New Orleans, and you can tell by the gumbo prepared by his wife, and although we never had the privilege of tasting this, the word is, this is the best in a galaxy far, far. So, yes.
Oh, well, we definitely have to taste this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, well, these are very interesting facts and also fun facts, of course, of our guest. So let's see who's the man behind this famous mustache. And dear guest, can you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Yitz. Hey, Erik. I am humbled and flattered by that introduction. My name is Chris Matthew, and I've built and sold a few startups, as you've mentioned in the past, and I'm working on a new one. So it's been a while. I'm super excited to reconnect with you guys and catch up.
Yeah, cool, cool.
Oh, it's great to have you, man, as a guest in our show. And before we started this recording, we actually spoke to each other, and you just mentioned it's been a while. But luckily, due to social media, and even during this pandemic, where no one is able to travel, it still doesn't feel like it's been ages or it's been a while. But so it's good to see your face, and for the listeners, we can see each other's face, and maybe in one day we also will be broadcasting this on YouTube as well. But for now, well, you just have to look it up. So yeah. maybe just one question, Chris. And as you mentioned, you've been building a couple of companies, and I think that building the company was never made. That's just an assumption, right? It's not really the objective. It's more like following your passion and building stuff, building solutions. But can you maybe explain a little bit on when did you find out that this was your passion, like building solutions, helping people, and in the process, building awesome companies?
Yeah, I don't know if it's luck or a formula that we've been fine-tuning over the decades, but I'm fascinated by emerging technologies, and there's a little niche and luck, I think, about blending that emerging tech to a business solution that happens to strike a chord, you know, with me from a passion perspective, that I get totally involved in it. And luckily have found other, larger companies that have seen the value of what that emerging tech in that business application brings to the market. And luckily have been able to exit 5 times so far. So,
but that's huge.
Yeah,
that's not something somebody would normally, ever do in their entire lifetime. 5 times.
Well, what's funny, there is a stitch that both you guys had touched on here that I think is would be a fun topic to talk about for a minute. Skynet, Eric, you were mentioning that was
spot on.
So I've watched Terminator 100 times and all of them. And I was sitting there on the couch with my family watching it yet again. And I was fascinated by the Hydra bots in this one scene talking to the Terminators, talking to the drones. I was like, and IoT was just starting to really come into its own. I was thinking, everything has an app. Like there's an app for every device, and they don't talk to each other. I was thinking, what if you could create a protocol, a machine-to-machine instant messaging protocol that would allow any device to communicate with each other, kind of like the Terminator robots. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, like I think it's possible. And some prototypes later, we built OctaBlue, and actually it started off as Skynet.im. It was, we were trying to recreate Skynet, and then OctaBlue came into like a real business around that. And then Citrix acquired that. But that didn't stop there. Like I was still fascinated by Skynet, as you kind of pointed out. And I realized that the IoT component of Skynet really wasn't Skynet. It was a side effect of Skynet. The Skynet system was really about artificial intelligence that would then tell the devices or robots what to do. So after we left Citrix and Citrix open sourced the whole OctaBlue platform, that was a cool move. I started another company that was a decentralized global supercomputer platform. That was the AI component of Skynet, and then that was acquired by Magic Leap. So that was a pretty interesting successor of the story. So now we had IoT, where any device could talk to any other device, machine-to-machine instant messaging. We had Computes, that was a decentralized global supercomputer. So any devices in the world could just attach, connect, see each other, and then start computing together as if they're individual cores on a physical supercomputer, but it's decentralized and more importantly, unstoppable.
Yeah.
Kind of like the real Skynet. And just when you think you
still have two components to it, because there's a good thing coming out of this, but also like what in the Terminator happened, a really bad thing that happened.
Yeah. Well, there was one more icing on the cake that it was just like meant to be. Like you can't make this stuff up, is that the only thing we were missing in building out Skynet was the Terminator vision. Like, remember when he would look at the people and machines, he would see the augmented reality and the infrared and all that. I was like, that was the Magic Leap glasses.
Absolutely.
That was like the final piece that all came together. Yeah.
So Chris, actually, because as you just mentioned, right, you've built a couple of great companies with even greater solutions, right? And then sell them off. And I was just, when you mentioned this, I was thinking like, okay, it's your passion, right? Maybe it's like building this. It's like your little baby, and then you're selling it off. And after a while, you're moving on. So from a emotional point of view, I could, well, maybe that's challenging from time to time, but just now you just explained with Skynet, and then moving on to Magic Leap, it's just one continuous story, just a different houses, right? So
yep.
Maybe that's the beauty on it, and well, in the process, making some money out of it, right?
Yep, exactly. And you know, what I've learned is that every time a bigger company has acquired one of these startups, you meet amazing new people that help you bring that dream closer to reality. So like Citrix, I mean, I still have friends that I keep in touch with, like you guys, that have been in the Citrix family forever. And I love that about that time I spent at Citrix, meeting new people and evolving that Octoboot platform to where we, at one point, we were like offered the magic quadrant space for enterprise IoT at Citrix. And Citrix was trying to figure out if that's really what their core business was going to be. And then at Magic Leap, I met some crazy, cool, smart people at Magic Leap, like Neil Stevenson, the author of Snow Crash, which was what Ready Player One was built on. I'd have weekly conversations with him. Oh my gosh. And then I met, it's amazing. And to be able to sit and have meetings with people like that every week was amazing. And another one, John Gaeta, he won several Academy Awards for inventing bullet time from the Matrix. Like, I still have like weekly conversations with him. It's like, how else do you fall into opportunities like that?
Yeah, that must be amazing. I mean, well, working for a global company, of course, as we all, the three of us, experience, right? It already helps you with getting connected with different people across the globe with different backgrounds and social cultures, etc. But it's still within that same space, right? And what you just described is, well, this is a galaxy somewhere far, far away. But
is it really
something that you can definitely?
Is it really?
No, in the end, it's just around the corner. Yeah. But it's people talking on different frequencies with each other, and it helps you growing as a person, and it helps you understanding to look at maybe some challenges in that we all face at work, probably, or maybe. Well, you can take this to any level, right? But it's great to meet people that have complete other views on things. So yeah, that must be a humbling, but also a very an experience that enriches you in life and in business.
Definitely. And to that point, you know, like seeing others carry on your mission and seeing it more realistically come to life. It dawned on me, you know, working on Skynet for 5 or 6 years, that it really is possible. And I've kind of gotten a little worried about some of the routes we've put in place. And now when I send email messages from my phone, it says, like I'm part of the Skynet resistance. I'm a little worried about where what we started could be going.
What is that? And it's the AI said, kicking in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah,
Skynet on its own, but yeah, well, then on one end of the spectrum, of course, there is this as you just say, Skynet coming to life, maybe, and on the other end, on the other side of the spectrum, there is this old vintage motorcycles like out of 1900, right? So 1901, I think, Indian was founded. Yep. So two complete opposites, right? When you're talking about technology.
So someone explained my persona as being a time traveler. They say I go to the future and I grab crazy technology and I bring it back with me. And then I go to the past and I bring these 100-year-old Indian motorcycles to the present as well. So that's kind of an interesting, I'm a time traveler.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen some pictures over at some social platforms that definitely would underline this, but you touched upon one point, right? At Citrix, and I think as many of our listeners in the EUC space are familiar with Citrix, and maybe this is also where they first met you, and they of course have met the solutions with Octoblue, and as a matter of fact, each and every day, I still pass by one of those stickers of Octoblue. So it's still around my house today. But I'm pretty sure at least you are still today a great inspiration to many of us. But especially at those days when it came to IoT and enterprise IoT, I think it was kind of the early days, right? I mean, once Octoblue was acquired by Citrix, IoT was playing a major part, not really playing a major part in the EUC world, but industrial IoT was already there. Home automation, of course, was there. So at least you inspired myself and your former colleague, Ingmar Verheij, to found this workspace IoT community or this foundation. And today we are, or at least I am, I'm not sure about Ingmar, but he probably agrees with me. I still think that there will be a time when workspace IoT, tying the digital workspace together with the physical workspace and make it easier for people and more, what is it like, an adaptive physical workspace that adapts to your... Yeah, I see you nodding because I'm preaching to the... or I'm praying. Okay, I won't go that won't try this one. I won't battle this one, but... preaching to the prior, that's the one. And I think also with Octoblue, and as you said, Citrix open sourced this and left it over to the community. But what's your opinion on this today? Is it still going to happen? Especially the pandemic didn't help, of course, but were we just too early with this, or what's your view on this?
I think it was early, and I think a lot of people were trying to figure out like why Citrix, you know, was getting into IoT at the time. And you know, when I met Mark Templeton for the first time, it was very clear and obvious for him. Like Citrix own GoToMeeting, Citrix, you know, had a lot of interesting complementary technologies, and Octoblue just kind of glued them all together. And I remember before like the acquisition was set in motion, Mark came to visit us in Tempe. We had a little flat above a pub. It was the best place to work. We'd go downstairs for beer, use the Wi-Fi. But Mark put a challenge in front of us. He's like, could you like automate a conference call, like people walking into a room and maybe the lights coming on, maybe the front lights come on, the camera comes on, the GoToMeeting just starts.
Volumes and the music and, started.
He was like envisioning like how all of this, you know, Citrix glue, if you will, could come together and automate an enterprise experience. And I kid you not, me and Geir Ramleth, my business partner, and Mark, Gus Pinto was on the trip Chris Wade. And I mean, brilliant. Like it was the brilliant, like, and Chris Fleck. So it was the brilliant SWAT team of Citrix coming in to evaluate what we're doing. We went to lunch and I left my team with the challenge of making this possible. Came back from lunch and Octoblue was already automating all of the stuff that Mark was curious about. And he was like, it was like slam dunk. It was done. Chris Wade is a brilliant hacker. He checked the sign off. Gus, as usual, would start dreaming of all the business opportunities that would come with this. And Chris Fleck was like the biggest cheerleader and supporter, you know, we had. And, at that point, the acquisition just rolled forward 8 business days.
Wow.
We joined the Citrix family. Yeah, so. Cool.
I remembered prior to starting at a job at Citrix, I was working for an independent consultancy company, which hosted a lot of tech for internal consultants because we weren't seeing each other a lot with sharing knowledge and that kind of stuff. And there was one guy who actually automated a coffee machine using Octoblue, and this was just prior to the acquisition of Octoblue, but which we now know as I think it's called VMware Realize Automation, and he combined all those things together with Octoblue, and he made a coffee machine. Put some coffee on the table, and it was like really cool. I was sold back then. I was sold. I was like, this is going to be big.
And yeah, he doesn't even drink coffee, right?
No, it's mostly water. But, and in the weekends, other stuff.
Stronger water.
Yeah, stronger water.
Yeah. I think everything, if it's not already connected, it will be connected. Like, that's just where the world is going. It's so obvious now.
Oh, and this wasn't a machine. He made it connected. He put some Arduino boards or anything in between in there, which it was just a typical, just to name a brand, Philips Senseo device, which isn't that good of a coffee to European standards. But okay, it will do. And he put in all those devices and he just said, so you want some coffee? Let me just press this button. Oh, what? You want another coffee? I have something on my phone. Watch. And I was like, dude, what did you do?
Yeah, that was the coolest part, I think, of all the experiments, was dealing with the Arduinos and Raspberry Pis, all the microcontrollers, and just like building things that were just barely imaginable with a few lines of code and like physical buttons. I know James Bullpen like still has some really cool hacks with Raspberry Pis and Octoblue and Arduinos, and I know John Moody was really heavy involved in all of that with Citrix too. Those were great fun days.
I always had the mentioned the name of James Bullpen, right? I always had the idea that Christian Riley just pops up in the office, lets his imagination flow, and then sets off James Bullpen to work, creating his life.
That's Christian. Christian just flies in. Pulls the rip cord and flies back out. You know, I worked with Christian he hired me at Bechtel. So Christian Gear, I worked at Bechtel for a couple of years, and a brilliant guy. And I'm super excited to see him back at Citrix BP.
The drone tech into strategies. The wind blinds.
Yeah, we don't expose our sources.
I still blame
sources.
Christian on that. Yeah,
yeah, but so he was one of the guys in that room. So you probably know the source of that story, right?
But for the also, I think many of times he made that same kind of mistakes. I still remember a some kind of movie. He drove into a conference room on an electric scooter step or anything, and almost crashed into the audience. So.
Well, I have to admit,
that's Christian.
There was one, I think it was a summit in Anaheim, where the Netscaler team flew in at least a box that could carry a Netscaler by a drone. And I don't know whether you were part of that keynote at that day, but maybe they kept you away from the controls of the drone. No, just kidding.
Well, you know what we did learn with Citrix. So we made our drone mistakes at Bechtel. And when we were at Citrix, we learned to put the drones on leashes so they couldn't get too far. So that was, you know, we learned.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, especially if you have a big crowd. You don't want to have a drone spinning out of control due to a lot of interference of all kinds of mobile phones and Bluetooth, maybe. Dude, I don't know. But,
speaking of the Neuralink earlier, I remember we were doing demos where we would attach the MindWave IoT control to the drones through Octoblue. And with your thoughts, you could concentrate and the drone would fly up and you kind of not stop concentrating and the drone would go down. And like, so yeah, it was some very dangerous experiments we would do with mind control on drones.
So we're getting a bit of Star
there was
Wars
this Kickstarter. But there was this Kickstarter where at least with your mind, you could drive the slides of your PowerPoint presentation, right?
These are not the drones you are looking
for. I could totally, easy. Yeah, move along. Yeah, and the Mayos. Yeah. I don't know if y'all remember those Mayo. It was like a bracelet you would put on your arm. You could totally control with hand movements. And it looked like we used to do magic tricks. That was also fun with Octoblue. We'd like, you know, hand up in the air and the slide would move.
Yeah. And the same, you mentioned magic, but you also had the Magic Leap, right? A gesture-based control for Windows and, there's lots of fun technologies that definitely, I don't know, people will tend to refocus every once in a while and leave the cool stuff out of it and go back to the core, unfortunately. But luckily we have, brilliant minds like you, Chris, that keep on going with all the fun stuff. So maybe just moving a little bit on with from Octoblu to the present day, right? With Group Room. What can you tell us about Group Room?
Well, maybe I'll take a little step backwards from Group Room. So after Magic Leap, you know, I was convinced we had actually been successful at building Skynet, and I started getting involved with, you know, thinking about what does the next generation of the web look like when there are no screens required anymore? And that's fascinating. It's this term that a lot of people call the spatial web. So what does the web, what does Instagram look like in the real world? I mean, we're all going to be wearing those Apple glasses next year. You know, I saw Thomas was talking about that on your previous episode. And we're all going to be seeing content pinned in the real world without screens anymore, because those glasses, it will be the new reality, because you'll see more and more people with those Apple glasses or Magic Leap or HoloLens. Would. In fact, what's going to be cool, like, you know, these iPods, they have this little case that when you're done with them, you put them in and charge. Their glasses are going to be just like this. You'll be able to put the glasses in the little case. They'll recharge up, put them in your pocket.
But what if?
And I think for the most time,
if these are going to be like designed like these old school 20s glasses, like kind of a punk steampunk.
Like these.
Exactly. That would be great.
Well, you know, Apple, I'm sure, will have some elegant design. You'll see everyone. There'll be a fashion statement. People will be wearing them. But more importantly, you'll see a crowd of people looking up in the sky. And you'll be like, you'll feel left out. FOMO, right? You'll feel left out. What are they looking at? And sure enough, there's going to be some dragon or something flying over the Apple campus or something like that. And because so many people see the same dragon flying in the sky, this isn't your brother, your dad's Pokemon game where everyone's chasing their own version of a
my
Pokemon.
My dad isn't playing this any Pokemon. I can assure you.
This will be everyone looking at the same Pokemon or the same dragon in the sky turning in the same direction. And you will be left out if you don't have glasses plugged into this metaverse. So I started a company after Magic Leap called XARPANET. And it's kind of like ARPANET was the very first implementation of the internet. XARPANET is this whole concept of AR, VR. Well, it's Thomas's, your Thomas Popguard episode, but it'll be AR and VR powered web. And if you're not in a really exciting place at the moment, you'll be able to teleport, you know, in VR to a destination, say Disneyland or whatever, and it will be a mirror world or a digital twin of the real world in VR, where you'll be able to walk around and explore and see that same dragon that people with the AR glasses are seeing in the real world at that real spot. So, like, imagine this. This is like co-presence between people physically there and people teleported there. And I think we've moved on from building Skynet to the Matrix is kind of what I'm thinking
so
we're building now.
Definitely going to be the Well 2.0.
This is going to be like the Web 3.0 or the World 2.0. This is teleporting to interesting places in the world and interacting with real people at those physical locations, even though you're in VR, but they see you in AR. Like, this is co-presence across realities.
And the ability to feel, sniff, smell, touch, and anything.
Well, to view, at least, but in it first, right? But
we all know where this is going, especially from the point of view, like the oldest job in the world and the oldest market in the world. Hey, you're looking really with your browser jits, but you know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I was a little bit like distracted.
It's probably inevitable.
This is why VHS made it into the world and not the other Betamax and anything.
So I had actually gotten kind of far with XARPANET. Like I have real-time digital twins. Like you can teleport anywhere in the world, like, you know, Vegas or, you know, outside of the Mirage in Vegas or whatever, the Eiffel Tower in Paris. And it's not super high fidelity, but I was able to grab all data out of OpenStreetMaps, building data, street data, even trees, tree data. And I'm able to, like, the buildings don't have the cool facade where they're recognizable, but they're the right shape, the right dimensions, the right height. The streets are there. So it's kind of like an 8-bit version, you know, early Minecraft. Version of like, yeah. Minecraft, yeah, of the real world, but you can teleport there. And if you're physically there, oh, and I can pin like that dragon flying around at a lat long. And in VR, you see it when you teleport there. And in AR, if you're physically there, you see the dragon. You know, it tells you on a map, the pin shows you the like zoom into reality mode and you see the dragon. And you're an avatar in the real world and an avatar in the VR world, and you're able to talk to people who are teleported. So I made a lot of progress with that and realized it was too far ahead of its time.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So when you start a company, it's all about timing. And if it's too far out there, you're not going to get the desired traction unless you're funded, which I typically bootstrap. But if you're funded, you've got time and runway to like keep exploring. So with XARPANET, it was all outdoors. It was all outdoors. And I was thinking, I really need to pause for a moment. The COVID pandemic crisis was happening. I was really, you know, sick with Zoom and those style of like tile Brady Bunch, you know, meetings.
Yeah.
And I thought, what if we take XARPANET indoors and apply that kind of spatial awareness of people moving around in indoor space and speaking with each other, with video, with audio, spatial audio, video, and grouproom.io was kind of born out of that experiment, and it started getting traction. That's the timing side that worked. Like, so definitely. The enterprise players started thinking, oh, this is the next evolution of Zoom. This is where maybe I can upload an image like of a room or a bigger space, like a conference space or something, and start moving around this space, kind of like a game. But my video is now a video avatar bubble that's in this room. And the closer I get to people, I start seeing them turn into like colorized bubbles instead of grayscale bubbles. And then I start hearing them, like volume starts increasing. And then now sooner or later, we've got the three of us standing in the hallway, you know, in a Citrix hallway, if you will, all just having a conversation. And it feels like real life. Like that was kind of the coolest, like aha moment of that, is being able to spatially move around a space and having the audio and the video feel like you're getting closer to people. And now you can have a conversation without the people across the hallway even hearing you. Like they see us as grayed out little avatars, but they can't hear us.
That's definitely something I'm missing in a lot of these conferencing tools nowadays. So to me, it's kind of big. But coming back to the XARPA thing you were telling about, fun thing though, the Sander podcast, the guy, he also listened. We were, I think this has already been in 2014 or 2013. We were in Cologne on a gaming conference called GamesCon. And there were some Israeli guys who was trying to create something else called Second Life. Second Life, I think we all know. But this was something in reality, and try to put this in perspective where you could use VR. Back then, VR was nothing, where you could time travel to Paris and walk through the streets in 1700, or go to New York and walk through the streets in 1820, or when Al Capone was in charge back then. And back then I was like, dude, why do you want to do this? This seems like a lot of effort. And it was a gaming conference, right? But this guy was convinced he was going to build this. I think the last time I thought about this was that evening when I was drinking with Sander at a bar, and we were talking about is how crazy this sounds. But if you could bring this to life with the data we're having at hand and now, and the ideas you are having, I think this is really possible.
So a mentor told me once, if your startup ideas doesn't sound crazy, you're not thinking big enough.
The fun fact was we were at this bar, and this guy was coming along with us, and he invited all his developers with us, and they start to explain what they were doing, and we were just there for press related things. And eventually we went outside because back then I was still smoking, and he did as well. So we were outside having a smoke, and this guy was coming along, and he was also smoking, and he was trying to explain to other people what he was trying to do, but from a really technical perspective. And in the end, we were doing his sales pitch on overselling his version 2 of Second Life with time traveling and time cop and everything related. And it got so much bigger. But we pretty much scoured a big crowd around us. So it was pretty fun. Pretty fun to talk
about
somebody's technology that wasn't even ours. Something that we thought, oh, this is way, way out of your league. But like you said, if you put it in perspective and you put it into the things we are having now, I think it's totally possible and totally cool to do.
Totally, totally. I would use that app. I love time traveling.
Yeah, but Chris, maybe you touched upon an interesting point there, right? If you think it's possible, you're not thinking big enough. And maybe that's due to, well, as we evolve as human beings over a lifetime, you get, well, dulled down as a human being, right? Because everyone tells you, as soon as you tell, when you have an idea, there are always 8 out of 10 people that says, no, this is not possible. Or so what about, and I know you've done some projects at Citrix, right, with the BattleBots, where you're using, not using, but you're leveraging the power of the mind of the child, right? They're not built down by life yet. That would be an option, right? If just ask him, what is it that you need?
To be more happy. We still build those battle bots every year. There's like a node bots day, international node bots day, and we have kids that come over and we help them build. And to your point, like they'll look for like a eating utensils, like a fork or a knife to stick on the front of their battle bot, you know, and it's so cool to see them win with some crazy, like cool idea, you know, pushing the other robot off. Like one had a screwdriver that was turning on a motor. I was like, that's kind of cool.
But the unlimited imagination, right?
Yeah. And in fact, there's some practicality to that. I had heard that Facebook's R&D team or something like that, they start off saying, expecting it to fail. And if you can prove that it works, then you've got like another round of iteration, like granted to you, like every like really far out idea that you go into it expecting to fail. I think that's kind of an interesting mindset.
I know one of the credos of our CEO at NVIDIA, so Jensen Huang, says, well, at least he says fail fast and then adapt and share what you have learned, right? So
forward.
Yeah. So I definitely like that motto. But sometimes we, as humans being, we are afraid to fail. And
but
without any failures.
Yeah, is it?
Look at Elon Musk with his spaceships, right? How many failures before success?
He's a poster child for like, if you can dream it, you can make it a reality. Brilliance. I mean, and just not only brilliance, but like to your point, it's the thick skin of, you know, being told you can't do it sometimes just makes you want to do it even more so. Right.
Yeah. Definitely. So, but maybe just as this is also an EUC related podcast, right? And you talked about mixing augmented reality together with virtual reality so that people can teleport into the same area. And you also talked about the ability to use, I think that was both virtual reality as well as augmented reality, right? Where you could do the teleporting towards Paris, and where you, it kind of, the first thing that popped to my mind, you were missing the RTX on capabilities from NVIDIA, but just a little bit like,
Yeah, I think all the GPU activity is playing such an important role, like with WebGL and all of this new tech. What I'm fascinated with at the moment is, do you remember the Kingsman movie?
Yep.
Where they had a board meeting and you walk into the boardroom and there's no one at the board table, but then the CEO or the chairman sits down with his glasses and all of a sudden you see the holograms all appear. Yep. At the table. That's the concept, right? So they're all like teleported into that conference room, and they're doing some more advanced technologies like volumetric capture that I think Thomas talked about, where they're doing like live volcap streaming of their whole body into that space. And with the AR glasses, you're able to see all of that live stream and live audio and spatial audio as if everyone's sitting at that boardroom table together. And I don't think that's far out. Like, I know Magic Leap had teased that. I know Microsoft had demonstrated some of that in their recent conference announcement. Can't remember what Microsoft called it, but it's all starting to line up to make that
but
possible.
How far are we away until big companies or enterprises are going to see the value in this, that this is going to be the, because as a technician, I think this is really cool. I want this.
So a lot of the companies, so Microsoft was doing it with a window. That's what I was, it was a glass, like as a three-dimensional glass display that they were kind of simulating this without glasses. But HoloLens and Magic Leaps, you know, they're working on solutions that require, like, you know, real sense camera, depth perception cameras. To your point, Eric, I've been playing with this idea of, you know, the new iPhone 12s have LiDAR capabilities built into them. So could you, like, using just mass production like devices, could you simply like do a 10-second scan of your boardroom, and then, you know, unfortunately you hold the phone up, but you would see the people all, maybe they're in grouproom.io little video bubbles for now, but you would see them in the same chair they think that they're sitting in, you know, by teleporting there. So I think on the cheap, we can actually get to something pretty close to that. And then as prices of equipment, you know, continue to drive downwards, you know, mass adoption, they'll be just become normal.
And will
reality.
This eventually then covers travel expenses where we could all do this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, if I can do a world tour, you know, in my pajamas by lunchtime, you know, and meet with all of my colleagues or business associates or sales deals around the world and make it feel like in real life, you know, as close as possible in real life.
Yeah.
I would only travel for vacations.
let's face it, Eric. I mean, today, all of us, we're jumping from one, I don't know, maybe Zoom or Teams or WebEx session from the other, right? All back to back. But what if you just put on your VR glasses and you jump from one room, or basically you're walking from one room to the other, just as in the office, right?
Yeah,
meeting customer A, meeting customer B.
Although I do not want to admit it, I do miss traveling. And that's mainly because you're into back-to-back into meetings. And you don't never have this disconnect moment out of what just happened, recap what's been told and that kind of stuff. But that's, I think, mainly a habit we have to get into. But still, though, I think essentially it will be a hybrid, where maybe 80-90% will happen in this VR, XR, AR world, and have the 10-20% get back to reality.
I agree with that. In fact, one of the use cases we're experimenting with grouproom.io now is this hybrid office space. So if I physically go into the office, say half the staff is going into the office and the other half stays remote, I'm able to like physically go to my office and load up Group Room, and I see the floor plan of what my office looks like. I move my little video bubble into my office, and now I see all the other physical people in their offices as bubbles. They're grayed out because I'm not close enough to them. But then I can see all the remote people who go into Group Room, and then they move their little video bubble to their cube or their other office next to me. And I'm able to like just move my little avatar and go to the next office over, even though the guy is not physically in it. I'm still able. It feels like it real life, where I'm just like actually walking down the hallway and knocking on the door and walking in and having that video conversation. It doesn't even in my mind matter if he's in London or in Phoenix. And, you know, maybe he is there physically there, and he'll surprise me when I move my little avatar. And he's like, just come on over.
Yeah, so this is like a real high fidelity avatar, right?
Oh wait, you're here.
This is a smelly avatar.
Exactly. Yeah. Smell-o-vision.
But I remember some events like all of us had to adapt, right, with the global pandemic going on, and you saw a lot of organizations just porting a face-to-face event to an online event, just broadcasting lots and lots of pre-recorded sessions. Personally, I have some doubts around this, but I saw also some colleagues who were attending these VR events where you just sitting at home with your VR glasses on, and you saw these avatars running around, and all the things that you just described, right? You could walk around, you have like the proximity when it comes to audio. But one of the things that my colleague said, like, I'm not comfortable sitting with a VR experience in my room on my chair for, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours a day.
There is kind of a challenge, right? Because of the G-force, right, Gus?
Yeah, well.
Yeah. It's kind of like wearing AirPods or headphones all day long. There's something like you feel like you're not getting air to your eyes or air to your ears, you know? There is a shorter duration to it, but I tell you, maybe you watch the keynote on your desktop in 3D, where it kind of feels like you're kind of like in like VR mode, if you will, on your desktop. But then when the sessions in between sessions where at the conference everyone's mingling in the hallway, maybe you just grab your Quest or something then, and you're walking around talking to people. That kind of It does feel like you're physically there when you're – so Group Room has support for mobile and VR as well as desktop. So it does kind of – you're able to talk to people in coming in through the desktop or the mobile. And what's cool is you see their little video bubbles like moving around even though you have the VR in. They don't see you because there's no camera like on the front of the VR. You're just your avatar. But you see them, and it feels – and they're eye level, 1.6 meters above the ground. And it feels like you can just walk up to, like I could walk up to you in the hallway and say, you know, hey, Eric, hey, Yitz, and start having that conversation as if I'm physically talking with you. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And so that also brings me to kind of one of my last questions already, unfortunately, but, like on LinkedIn, you have this tagline, I'm fascinated by alternative communication platforms. And I think maybe we already touched upon this, but if you could be the child again, right? And you're not limited by all the naysayers. What would be the ultimate communication solution? And maybe it's the obvious question, but maybe your surprises as well. What would be the ultimate communication solution or platform for you?
Yeah, for me, it has to do with this co-presence. I am fixated, hyper-focused on this idea of people remotely teleporting and being able to communicate with you as if you're in my room. So when I did the Group Room VR, I said, I wonder if this would work on Magic Leap glasses. So I just put on, it's a browser, you know, WebXR application. I put the Magic Leap glasses on, click the little VR button. And sure enough, those video bubbles of the remote people who teleported were physically in my game room with me, floating around in my game room. And it's magical. like when you see that, like whether it's a person like Volcap streaming their whole body standing in your living room speaking with you, and if you've got the LiDAR map, they actually from VR actually are in your living room and they could go and sit on your couch and you would physically see them on your couch. It is as close as we'll ever get to true, you know, Star Trek transporter, you know, being able to like beam up or beam into your living room. And I actually see your living room. I could see your mantle over your fireplace and walk over to it. And you see me in AR, like walking to your mantle. It's
as long
it's
as you can't drink my beer or anything, I'm fine with it.
What's he doing? I locked my door. He's still in my house.
Why is he drinking for the and beer? Eating my, I don't want that.
Yeah, we have some AI algorithms in the background, right? Just to prevent that kind of behavior, making use of that stuff.
We saw how the Fly movie worked out. I don't know. I'm not game for that yet.
No, but Amazon pretty much did the same thing with ordering stuff from their Echoes by preventing with voice recognition who was ordering and who can't be ordering, because I still remember I'm having, I think, a second generation Echo in my home, which I imported because we couldn't do it in Europe, but I wanted to have an Echo. And friends were coming over and they were like, hey, I've seen this on movies. And it was like, Alexa, order me a pizza. And I was like, yeah, dude, ain't going to work.
Look at the stack.
He only
of boxes.
Listens to me. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but then again, they had some mishaps with that as well, right? With some commercials on the television demonstrating how to order some kid stuff.
I think this is a pretty big thing on YouTube. You could still watch what was happening there.
But Chris, I definitely like the idea of using, like you just said, right, the iPhone 12 with LiDAR, but using the edge devices that already are all over the place, right? Because I'm not sure whether the two of you have seen it or the listeners have seen it, but the NVIDIA GTC keynote with Jensen, part of it was real and part of it was in our, what formerly known as was Octoblue, and today what's called Omniverse. So we have this 3D scanned CEO that was actually doing some of the presentations. We were doing the gestures.
Wow.
Yeah. The spettles were there as well. There were also part of this was real. Part of it was fake. We had a digital twin of the kitchen. And there's a great movie of behind the scenes, and maybe one day it will be publicly available on YouTube. But it's really amazing what they did there. But at least the audience couldn't tell. There was only one mistake that they make with underneath his leather jacket. Sometimes he was wearing a polo. Sometimes he was wearing a T-shirt. That's the only way you can tell whether it's real, the CEO, or it was in the metaverse. So, but I saw this image of, like, I don't know how many cameras were scanning his entire body, and he needed to do a couple of movements to capture everything. And this is not simply feasible for all of us. So using all those devices that are already, in the pocket of our trousers, right? And, I really like that thought.
Or what if phone booths come back, and in the phone booth, there's four, like, you know, depth sensing cameras, and that's your teleport. It's like Superman. That's your teleportation gateway.
I like that. I like that here. Yeah. So talking about the future, but maybe heading, unfortunately, over to the final question. And Chris, maybe you have sensed it already. As a new tradition for this second EUC Digest podcast season, we ask our guests to come up with a question for the next guest. So in our previous podcast, we had Nano Auerhand from Citrix, so a former colleague of you. And he asked the question without knowing that you would be the one who receives this question. But his question is, what is your biggest learning point in life that you are passionate about to pass on to the next generation?
Wow, that's a good one. I it touches on something you said, Yitz, earlier. I think it would be terrible for any of us to get the fun beaten out of us. Like, you have to keep that professional curiosity alive, that childlike experimentation alive, no matter what people say, do, or think. And truly, if you can dream it, you can build it, you can apply it. And that's what legacies are made of. Like, legacies are made out of, you know, the Elon Musk's approach to the world, that I'm going to go to Mars no matter what people say, and I've got the means to make it happen. I think that's pretty amazing. And you've got to keep that childlike curiosity and dreaming alive, no matter what society ever does about it.
That's, I think, an amazing answer to an amazing question.
A good lesson. Yeah. Don't listen to the naysayers.
Exactly.
Although,
but
pursue your own dreams.
Maybe now the hardest part, without knowing which is the next guest, what question do you want to ask our guest or guests in a next podcast? And like we said, we don't know what the topics are or will be. Maybe we do. But what will be the question you want to ask our next guest or guests before we hand it over to...
I wish I would have given it more thought. I love the pineapple question earlier, because I would have been a yes on the pineapples on pizza.
No.
No, yes. I'm with you, Chris. I'm with you. I'm with you totally. So it's two against one, Eric. Sorry.
Yeah. In fact, I almost had, I couldn't muster it up, but I almost had a pineapple cheeseburger.
It's a kahuna burger.
I pass. I should have had it, but I don't know. Maybe, you know, in that vein, I would say cookie dough ice cream. I'm not a cookie dough ice cream person, but I would say it kind of has the same resonance of pineapple.
But what would be the question? Would you like cookie dough ice cream afterwards or before, or what would be the question?
To eat or not to eat cookie dough ice cream?
Yeah, to eat or not to eat. Yeah, I wish I had a better question. I'll have to think on it and get back to you if I can come up with anything.
No,
more
now it's going to be the cookie dough.
There you go. Yeah, no, would you eat you can, it or you, not?
Yeah, you can always or maybe what would be the what is it like most original non invented ice cream flavor?
Oh, but that's a good one too. Yeah.
Oh, but yeah.
No, it has to be something from you. So,
well, you know, maybe here's one. Do you know those fountain drinks that are like allow you to mix any combination of drinks? What's your craziest fountain drink that you've mixed up? And can you give it a name?
I think that
if you create it, you get to name it, right? Like if you write some code, you get to
name
it.
I think that's a good one.
There you go.
I'll write it down. But
now it's up to you. So this is your closure.
Yeah, we're going to wrap it up. And this is the third time I say I need to say unfortunately. So thank you very, very much, Chris, for being our guest on the today's show. And if people would like to know more about you or would like to follow you, where do they need to go, Chris?
Yeah, I'm Chris Matthew on all the social platforms. Matthew's kind of spelled funny, so look at the show notes.
Yeah, definitely. We'll make sure that's in. And before I really wrap up, I would like to emphasize that we also record a monthly Throwdown podcast, which we publish also next to your favorite podcast player. But we also publish this on YouTube. So make sure to catch that one. And of course, do not forget to subscribe on the YouTube channel. And also, if you like to join one of our recordings live, we'll be sharing a link on Twitter. So don't forget to follow us on Twitter at EUC Digest. And with that, I want to say again, thank you, Chris, for being our guest today. And I want to say thank you to all the listeners. We hope you enjoyed this snack as much as we did, as we try to serve you the right amount of EUC for your appetite. And if you have a tip, topic, or you want to be a guest, or you have a suggestion for a guest for our next episode, or just want to stay in touch with us, you can reach out by email on podcast@eucdigest.com or via the social channels. So for now, thank you for listening, and we'll meet again in our next podcast. Thank you, cheers, and bye-bye.
You guys rock. Thank you.